Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello! Welcome to the big show. Tad late, awfully sorry. Thursday nights are a bit of a press for 8 o'clock. We might have to go back to 9, I think. We're here to discuss the week in technology. I'm joined by a great panel, slightly lighter than normal. Few people on holiday. It's the silly season, of course. Joining us, welcome return to a man who's not been here for a while, Mr. Bart Bouchotts. How are you doing, sir?
Hello, folks. I'm doing just fine. Looking forward to my summer vacation, actually, which starts tomorrow at 5 o'clock.
When do you start? 5 o'clock, right. And where are you going?
I'm not going anywhere, but 2 weeks of not work.
No work.
That's always good.
Yeah.
So you got 2 weeks in that room?
No. But no, I'm going to be really busy, of course, but I won't be doing what I usually do. I'll be doing other cool stuff.
Excellent. Next to him, Miss Sarah Gray. How you doing, girl? Ah, caught a mid-swallow.
Yeah, I'm fine, thank you. Ewan, how are you?
You're thinking that there's another person and there isn't.
Yes, I know. I was forgetting about that. That's why it caught me on the hop.
Now, I've got a thank you to make.
Why?
Well, because I caught up on the web show on the way home and I listened to the last one and the one before, and you were on the one before that was talking about WordPress, and you said that the website used to be done in iWeb, and you decided that you needed to go a different direction. You didn't say that the Muppet who started the network created it in iWeb, which was a complete and utter dog, and it's Rankin's fault, and I fixed it for him, which is the truth.
Well, I'm sure if you ask Paul nicely, I'm sure he can edit that bit that you've just said into the
I thought you took that on the chin rather well. You did. And I was getting worried, thinking, holy hell, they're going to think that she programs in iWeb.
Oh, God, it never occurred to me that people might think that. I'll have to remember to be a bit more careful.
Exactly. Don't coat yourself with the iWeb slurry.
Hang on a minute. You are missing something here, Ewan. This is Apple. I think anyone who knows me knows that there is no chance that of being an Apple product.
I listened to that show and I'm telling you, it sounded like you programmed in iWeb and you did the original site in iWeb.
No, what have I done? Sorry.
Exactly. That's why I want to officially say the cock up with iWeb was mine, just because I'm a numpty with web and I needed something to post with. So
you didn't. It wasn't a cock up, Ewan. It was the first version of the site, wasn't it?
No one found it. You do a Google search on it, you couldn't find it. It was crap.
That's because the text was an image, because it was iWeb.
Exactly. And then the other thing as well is the last two episodes of the web show, I haven't understood a frigging word of what they've been saying. It's been, what was that? Especially the last one, responsive design. God, if you haven't listened to the web show and you're into web development, you should listen to it, because it's geek central. The last one on responsive design, they were talking about hole points and M's versus 906s and stuff. And, thank you.
Yeah, responsive design is a whole subject on its own.
Well, I got that. I figured out that, but and last, but of course by no means least, Mr. Eric Lanigan, how you doing, mate?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're all right. We're okay. What have you been doing this week?
Actually setting up another computer. My dad got one of those Retina display laptops, and I've been setting it up remotely across the country with a screen sharing. I got his old laptop on one and the new one on the other, and I've been just like transferring files, setting up settings, all that kind of stuff.
That is so cool. God love Apple for that. Screen share. Back to my Mac. Beautiful.
By the way, I'm so jealous of that SSD in the new Retina displays. I went to copy. Obviously, I can't speak to the display because I haven't seen it in person, but the SSD is just insane. I went to duplicate a disk image, a 4 gigabyte DVD image that was on the hard drive of the Mountain Lion installation, and it duplicated at 350 megabytes per second. That duplicated the 4 gigabyte disk image on the same drive to itself in under a minute, in like 5 seconds, like as I watched. So the status bar just went bloop.
That's
yeah, because
impressive.
There's no spinning disks, you don't actually have to keep waiting for the next sector to come by when you're copying from the same disk.
Yeah.
So it doesn't care. You know, just say, yeah, sure, I'll take it from there to there.
But it's also that I want to point out that that's a huge speed improvement since this MacBook Air that I've got just from 2 years ago. They've really improved the speed of those Apple SSDs.
Yeah. I mean, just a straight SSD makes a difference, but I'm sure the Apple SSDs are very good quality. I mean, I've put one in the Mac Pro, and it starts in an instant. It's beautiful, absolutely beautiful. The week in technology. It's been a bit of a funny one. Now, if you remember George W. Bush, he's the guy who unfortunately didn't choke on a biscuit. He had a whole load of wire warrantless wiretaps going on in the States, and one of the last cases that's been outstanding for that has finally been settled, and basically they could do whatever they want. It's an open copyright or open opportunity for the government to do it. Kim.com has released a video of his arrest. Now, I just need to make sure I get the quote right on this. The video shows, at the trial, attack dogs being used to ransack his estate, helicopters, two of them, with armed police aboard, a bus of cops that was then followed by another load of bus cops with firearms, and apparently this guy did nothing more than run a torrent site. So overreaction seems to be the case. And a guy called Lon Seedman sat and did a really geeky podcast on the NASA Curiosity thing landing this week, and he was hit with some copyright infringement lawsuits. All he'd used was NASA's videos, which are public domain because they're a government organisation, and apparently a few news outlets said they were their videos and slapped copyright infringement notices on him. So well done to them for the research. And finally, Stacey Ribchin has created a 50 Shades of Grey-style concierge sex service on the net, which I thought probably would have been done already, but apparently not. She finds true love for you or more. There we go.
So she's a pimp.
I guess that's kind of it, yeah. That's probably...
Cutting to the chase, yes.
I think we should say that that's probably a light-hearted comment and maybe is not the truth, and therefore, Stacey, please don't sue us for libel because we're not suggesting you are a pimp or a madam in any stretch of the imagination. We need to do more research into that story. The Week in Tech.
Can I just pull us back to the NASA one?
Yes, do.
Because this is the problem here isn't with... Well, it is partly with the news organization, but the underlying issue is with how YouTube handles copyright. So the way it works is they have an automated system that everyone who makes something that they copyright uploads their stuff to. And then they match that against anyone's uploads. And if they find a match, then the person who uploaded the original gets to put ads on it or have you pulled down or whatever they like, pretty much. So what's happening is these news organizations are doing a report on the lander, and those news organizations are using the same free and open clips from NASA in their reports. They're then uploading their reports as copyrighted. Therefore, the automated matching system is saying, this is just the same as that report. Therefore, this person stole that stuff. And so all of these companies get to put ads on this other guy's work and claim the revenue. Mm. And the only appeal process is not an appeal to YouTube. It's actually an appeal to the person stealing your work. And you basically get to say, are you sure? And if they say yes, that's it. The appeals process is closed. Oh. And I've had this happen to videos of mine. It is... an absolute disgrace.
That's a bigger discussion than I thought.
Copyright infringement by the big guys against the little guys. It's like an inverse of all of the problems that have been on the web.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought. Yeah, I like that way of putting it. Because it really, YouTube has a big problem with fair use, and they end up enforcing a draconian copyright system where no one can copy anything at any time, and that's just not even how the laws are written. If you're a news program or you're commenting on something or you're using something as a parody or for humor or to refer to it in order to, again, make comment or criticism of it, that's totally legal under the law. But YouTube does not really allow for a system, does not have a mechanism to check that and approve fair use. You have to go through this very difficult process of, in some cases, fighting for the right to get your account restored. If you've been taken down from like the three strikes rule or one of those things where they say, oh, you've violated too much, and it may have been fair use. They just don't have a way to check that.
Wasn't the
may not even have been fair use. It may have been actual completely open things that have just been falsely claimed. And you have no way to say the person who asserted this copyright is wrong. They do not own this copyright. There's no way to even do that.
So it's literally just the first person that publishes it is the one that has the rights to say whether it's theirs or not.
Yeah, I uploaded a video on which I used loops from Final Cut, or was it from iMovie? It was from one of the ones I paid for anyway. And some company in Brazil or somewhere in South America asserted rights in it, and they now have ads on my video that I can't remove and I can't do anything with.
And there's no process.
Asserted rights on your video? Just someone totally unrelated?
Some random company with a name I don't even recognize that sounds Latin American.
So,
oh wow.
So get me forgive me if I'm wrong here, but if mm-hmm. that's the case, then what's to stop, say, for example, me taking something that's on the BBC and publishing it, and then the BBC decide to publish it after me, and then I get to assert rights over it, even though it's not my content?
I think where that falls down is that you won't get one of those magic media accounts where you get to upload stuff.
Yeah, but if I did have, then I can assert rights over the BBC content if I happen to publish it before them, if they were going to publish it.
And as I say, there is no appeals process. The appeals process is you ask the person who is falsely claiming they own your stuff if they're sure, and if they say no, that's it. The button goes away and says you cannot appeal this. So it's either you have a legal team on retainer or your copyright gets absolutely abused on YouTube. They are your two choices.
Right. And I think Sarah, I think what Bart is saying, and to answer your question, is that you don't get to do it. I mean, you could do that, but because the example used was the BBC, they'd quickly overturn that. If it's the BBC or Disney or Universal or Warner Brothers or any of those guys who actually have a back channel to YouTube, but in fact, when they do a takedown notice, it's them going through the back channel, a privileged login account that lets them act as the legal takedown authorities. They don't actually have to contact YouTube. They go in, they log in, and they do the takedowns themselves. And so if you're one of those privileged few media conglomerates, obviously your copyrights will be honored. If you're anyone else, you're susceptible, like Bart was saying, to someone overseas just saying, oh, that's mine. And then where's your recourse? Because YouTube does not care who you are, does not care who owned your content. It's just as easy for them, if not way, way easier, to just cancel your account.
Yeah. In general, though, it doesn't result in cancellation. It just results in ads being put on your videos and all of the revenue from those ads being filtered to people who don't actually have a right to it. Basically, I'm being, mildly defrauded. Because, we're talking cents, but I guess if they do it to 1,000 people...
It's not just you. I've heard this from a number of YouTube content creators, especially that do documentaries and stuff like that. They say that they get slammed for copyright all the time, and there's little to no recourse on YouTube.
Bart, were you saying that you took videos from elsewhere and made them into your video? Were you saying they were originally yours?
They were entirely my video content. All I used was an audio loop from iMovie, which I had paid for. And that audio loop was picked up as being something completely different that it certainly wasn't. And the rights were asserted to a Latin American sounding company.
Right.
And there was nothing I could do about it. Those ads are still on my video. When I go into my account, that video is flagged as copyright infringement. It is not.
Have you written to your MP?
Well, we call them TDs, but I would have to first explain what a computer is.
And YouTube a couple of years later.
And while we're talking about the Antichrist, I mean Google.
They're not my Antichrist.
No, yours is Apple. Google has been fined. Breaking news today that Google has been fined a record $22.5 million for tracking people in Safari who did not want to be tracked. So if you went to your Safari browser and you toggled the do not track privacy setting, Google still tracked you for some reason.
Well, no, the way it worked was that Apple set a default Google didn't like. The default Apple set was no third-party cookies, which made Google cranky.
Which did that go in line with the European ruling?
This isn't to do with the do not track cookie. This is just third-party cookie settings.
Right.
And so what they found is that if you set up an empty form, basically there's a bug in how Safari implements third-party cookie blocking. And so Google found a bug. And their logic was, because the default is no third-party cookies, people didn't actually make a choice. Therefore, it's okay to circumvent the setting, because we have found the technical hack that circumvents the setting.
Right.
Therefore, we're okay to track people.
Okay.
And the court went, no.
No, you aren't.
Yeah.
People have indicated a preference. You need to follow it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, this decision is a little bit troubling just because... I think it's still, it sets a dangerous precedent in that they don't know what they're doing. Maybe this is the right thing to do. Maybe it's not. But I feel like they don't really have the right justification or really know what exactly they're upset about. Because I understand Google's argument, and Safari is the only browser that does that. And most people have no idea whether they opted in, opted out. They never cared. You know, they didn't know. And if they're using any browser besides Safari, they similarly didn't know, didn't care, and were more easily tracked. So I don't think that people were necessarily, or at least most people were necessarily saying, don't track me. They just didn't know what the setting was, and Google went around that. But then the bigger issue is, well, if the standard is just being tracked without being asked to be tracked, well, don't we have thousands of cookies on all of our computers as we speak doing that? Isn't Facebook doing that every time we go to a site that has a little Facebook Connect window, or Twitter has its little thing that follows? Actually, I don't know if Twitter does it, but Facebook is notorious for following you from site to site, and Google has its own little frames that follow you. There are all these other ways. So if they're really upset about just tracking where you've been without your permission, there are just hundreds, if not thousands, of bad actors they could go after. So this is just, you know, I don't know how this sets a precedent, because you can't go after everyone who just looks at a cookie without your permission, because everyone does that.
In this case, it was clearly Google found a security bug in Apple's browser and used that bug to circumvent user settings. So that's kind of different to just having cookies. Because the other sites, Facebook isn't going around exploiting vulnerabilities to force their cookie on, even when the settings say not to. They just have their cookies everywhere, and as it happens, 99% of people, without making a decision, have defaulted to allowing them to do that, and so they collect billions and billions and billions of data. They're not doing anything particular. I mean, you can argue about the morals, but that we're not a religious podcast, so forget about that. But I mean, they're not doing anything technically sneaky there. They're just using a feature of the HTTP protocol. And as it happens, people are happy to have them do it, or people don't care. But Google did something extra by actually exploiting a vulnerability to circumvent those settings and force a cookie to be saved even when cookies were disabled. Yeah. So that is different.
So Safari's browser automatically rejects tracking cookies by default.
And the story not tracking, it's third party.
No, it rejects tracking cookies by
default. No. This setting is third-party cookies. Now, not all third-party cookies are tracking cookies. Third-party cookies are just cookies handed to you by a domain that is not the domain you typed into your address bar.
Yeah, Bart's right. I'm looking at the setting. The Safari's actual phrasing is block cookies from third parties and advertisers.
But it was to do with the tracking cookies, according to the story. And the Google got around this by blocking... Google got around this by adding code to its adverts that made Safari think that there was an exception to this rule.
Yes, they used an empty form as how they tricked Safari.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a question in the chat room here. I mean, Jimmy the Great makes a great point that Google could find 22 million in their sofas.
It's a token thing. It's a slap on the wrist.
But question from Tone. How do we know that Google are the ones that do this? That is not up for debate, I don't think. This is absolutely guaranteed.
It's in their code,
They definitely did it. They added this code to their stuff for the purposes of getting around
to one of their pages, you do view source, you can see they did it. That's not debatable.
The interesting thing, I think, from this point of view, is if Google actually deliberately circumvented this, and I can't imagine they would have been fined if they didn't do that, how do I know that I can trust Chrome?
Well, you can't, clearly.
Well, that's a bigger question in general, isn't it? I mean, Google are a company who make their profit by selling information about you, and they're offering you a free browser which knows everything you're doing. Is there a conflict of interest there?
Even though there's an option in there to disable third-party cookies.
Yeah, but the way you say that, Sarah, is like, how do I know I can trust Chrome in the future? Well, why did you ever trust it in the first place? Why did you ever trust any browser in the first place?
Well, okay, I rely on the fact that if there's a setting in there that it actually works. I don't know, but I kind of assume that, especially, and this case actually proves the point that they have. If that is set up that way, then it has to work that way. And if a company tries to get around that, then that's deemed to be deceitful. And I'm pleased that this verdict's happened the way it is. Given that Google, in this case with Chrome, Google actually control the browser as well. How do I know that when I tick the box in the preferences, the settings, to say you know, don't allow third-party cookies. How do I know that they're actually doing that? I mean, we know because of DoubleClick, they've got a massive vested interest in, you know, wanting to use this feature.
The point of this exploit was the fact that the user had to interact with the Google ad. It didn't do it just as soon as the ad came up. You had to interact with the ad. And when you interacted with the ad, that's what made Safari think that you were accepting it.
You sure about that?
Well, all I'm going is on the story that I've got. And the story that the exception was accepted by Safari for the cookie if they interacted with the Google advert.
Okay, so that doesn't tally with what I've been hearing, because this has been dragging on for months, but perhaps, Ars Technica is a good source, so...
Aye, absolutely. I mean, if it's on Ars Technica and it says it, I'd say the diligence is probably high.
Let me go back and mention, I see you guys, I see your point, and I agree that is troubling that they actually circumvented, that they exploited a security vulnerability to do this. That definitely raises a lot of ethical questions, but I guess my point is, Sarah, you're right. You did check the box saying don't track these cookies, but I think out of the whole scheme of Safari users across all the browser devices, including on the iOS devices, I think. Does anyone know whether iOS was included in this?
Oh, yes. No, this was big time. And the reason iOS is actually one of the reasons that Google felt they were justified.
I bet like 1% of customers actively made that decision to say, I don't want tracking cookies. It's the default. It's the only browser in the world to this day where that's the default. And I think even as an option, I don't think this option even exists in Firefox or Chrome.
It does.
That they violated users' preferences. Right. So to say they violated the user's personal preference might be 99% of the time inaccurate. And so again, the question is Google really are they really the ones you want to go after? In this, it's going after one not even a bad actor, but a mediocre actor in a much bigger scheme of purchase and detail tracking of all aspects of all people's lives and all sorts of things that people are really upset about.
Yeah, I mean, okay, theory, any company offering a website, if they were aware of this, could actually write code to get around that setting.
Yeah, what I'm reading here on Ars is saying that Google exploited a hole in Safari's privacy setting by placing a temporary cookie from DoubleClick domain, which opened the door to all cookies, including an advertising tracker that Google had represented would be blocked from Safari browsers. By misrepresenting how it would deploy the cookie, Google violated an FTC settlement it signed in October 2011 due to deceptive privacy practices in the Google Buzz social network. So this is something that they've been found of before by that within Google Buzz, and they signed an agreement not to do it, and they've contravened that agreement.
That's less than a year ago. That's outrageous. You know, if it had been something they signed up to maybe 5 years ago or something, you could think, okay, well, maybe fair enough.
But, Jimmy the Greek
less
says...
Less than a year ago. I mean, that definitely sounds like it's...
Jimmy the Greek says Google equals Skynet.
Just to go back one step to the notion that most people didn't opt in, which is true, but those who did, their setting is undistinguishable from those who didn't. So Google's blanket overrode everyone who actually made a choice.
Oh, I agree. My point is, I think there is an important question that's brought up here in this case, and I don't want it to just die here with the security loophole exploitation argument, because so often when you see these cases of precedent setting computer and internet lawsuits, especially involving governments, so often they don't know what the technology does. They don't know how to phrase it. They don't even know what's going on. So they see, so they go after these key terms that are in the laws, like extended access to a network or something. There was something in the news the other day about some guy working for the CIA. He was a whistleblower, and now he's accused of treason for something that could have been used to describe Facebook usage in the law. So again, here they're saying because they violated a security loophole and a security setting. But my point is, there are so many companies doing this. If this really just ends with saying, "Oh, we got them, we got the bad guys," and they move on, that serves no purpose to the public. I think they should ask the questions: what is being tracked? What other companies are tracking? Why is it bad to be tracked? What broader policies can we initiate to help people understand who's tracking them, where it's being stored, how it's being used? No one knows or cares about any of that stuff yet, and I think we should.
Yeah.
Okay, but this is where Do Not Track comes in, because that is actually what is being done. So the concept of the Do Not Track cookie is the answer to this, and it's being negotiated with the advertisers, the browser makers, and various bodies of that are interested in this, for advocate groups and so forth. Mm-hmm. So the idea with Do Not Track is it's going to be a header that browsers can set. But part of the deal is that if the browser manufacturers all agree that it will be off by default, then the advertisers will all agree to respect it.
Yes.
And that is happening, and that is taking traction, and that is now in IE, that is now in Safari, that is now in Firefox, that is now in Chrome. That is pretty much everywhere now, the Do Not Track cookie. And if the advertisers are as good as their word and live up to their end of the bargain, then progress has been made. And then it becomes a matter of teaching the public that this setting exists, which is the next hurdle. And that's where the why should you care obviously becomes very important.
I mean, again, there's some contents in the chat room here. Google deceptive, never. I think
also, just really quickly, part of where I'm coming from is not like I think someone was saying, Eric's wondering why everyone's tracking people or something. I don't mean some kind of like weird surveillance thing. I mean just like customer data, sales data, advertising purposes, all this stuff. I saw an article in the New York Times or somewhere. It was a big feature story recently about all these companies that store and mine our information, whether it's something we buy at Target or something just anywhere, credit cards, just anything that you wouldn't even imagine is all being stored places where if you audit them, and this is what the reporter did, if you ask for, please show me a copy of everything that you have about me, you can't get it. And it's legally their information. They own the information about you. And you can't see what they have. You can't control what they have or how they acquired it.
And even your government doesn't have that privilege.
Yeah. So I think we have to, it is going to become more and more important to say what is being stored about us, even if it's consumer data, even if it's something as simple as changing our, I have all these things I go into about how advertising literally changes buying habits and all these things that advertisers know, but that I think it can be harmful over the long term. And if we don't know what's going on there, if we get ads from things that we don't realize why they got there, all this stuff. I think it needs to be a broader discussion about what is being stored, why, and what the value is. And if they're just going to go after a little unauthorized thing here and these little red flags that pop up, I think that's missing, that's looking at the trees and not the forest.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, in theory, anyone who knows about it, who creates a website, could exploit it. Why did they pick on Google? Could be the specific question. Probably because they did.
But I mean, the ideology of the cookies thing, and I know this is a big issue with the EU cookies thing as well, but if you don't have cookies that track where you've been and what you've done, simple things like shopping carts just don't exist.
But they are great first-party cookies, right? This notion that third-party cookies are essential to the web is wrong. Right. First-party cookies are essential to the web. But third-party cookies, they were like an absolute rarity until someone discovered you could use them to track people. And that's when they came into use. I mean, really, right. if you're logging in to your Flickr account, you and Flickr need to share a cookie so that Flickr knows who you are as each connection comes back. If you log into Facebook, Facebook needs to know who you are. But DoubleClick don't need to know who you are to log you into Facebook.
What about if they've used the pass-through thing, though?
That is a valid use of third-party cookies, but usually the way that works is that you get sent to Yahoo's page where it's then a first-party cookie that you establish, and then you move on to where you're going. So it's still a first-party relationship at the point you're setting the cookie.
Okay. Right, fair enough.
So, but even if they took away the cookies, they could still track you anyway, because the websites you visit have the HTTP referrer header, so they could stick that through some CGI script and pass it back to the advertisers anyway. So even if you banned every single cookie, if they want your information, they'll find a way.
And sorry, Sarah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I know we're not talking about the EU directive, but one of the problems, the only problem I can see with disallowing third-party cookies is it can cause problems with analytics for a site, which is, you know, analytics are quite important, as we well know. So, there are some issues with making a blanket ban of using third-party cookies.
Yeah. I don't think blanket anything is the answer. The Do Not Track idea is the answer. Because if you have an agreement where the advertisers will play ball if we play our bid, then the actual technology isn't what's being argued about anymore. What's being argued about is what you're doing, not how you're doing it. And that's a much more sensible way to have this discussion.
And I think Sarah even brings up a good point about what is the meaning of third-party cookies? Have the law enforcement people who have been arguing against this, do they really understand what that means? That it could be something as harmful, I mean, as harmless and useful as analytics or statistics or some kind of service that you may want from a third party that isn't being served from the domain or the place that you browse to, but is not a tracking cookie, might have no nefarious purposes at all. But could be grouped under the third-party cookie name, but is not something bad. So again, I don't think this is really being explored or understood by the people who are doing this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the key point is if you're not careful, it's all about protecting the kids, and it's got nothing to do with kids. You know, it's always that kind of, you play the boogeyman card as opposed to just sensibly looking at it and saying, well, some of these things are required and some of these things aren't required.
Yeah.
In this case, though, if there's a prior agreement with a company that they will not do X, and then they then proceed to scoff at the court or government who placed that order on them, I don't think anyone can say that it's a waste of money to go after these people, because surely if the rule of law has no meaning, that's a much bigger problem for society.
But I mean, I think just to close the point off here, Maxis has made an issue in the chat room here. They overrode everyone's settings and did something they specifically said they would not do. They signed up to the promises you've just said there, Bart. If they're really sticking two fingers up at the US government to that kind of degree, because that's what you're saying, and that's what Mac's saying, and that's what the story seems to be saying, $22.5 million, that's not a fine.
Well, not for Google.
No, that's
chicken feed, like you said, it's
their lunch bill for a month.
It's token. It's the go. It means that you can get a really good headline that makes the DOJ look good while doing no actual damage. Okay. Therefore, everyone wins.
There we go. They're all bastards.
You said it, not me, but sure.
And it's all theatre.
And this is why I can't get a Nexus 7 review unit from Google. I'm telling you. They won't send me one. I keep saying.
I've had a play with one, and it's one of my colleagues at work has got one, and I've had quite an extensive play, and I wasn't that impressed. Not enough to go out and buy one anyway.
Oh, that's it. I won't buy it now then. Cool. By a four-channel helicopter as well. Super Chicken in the chat room says we should be renamed the Bastard Tech Network. Maybe true. Square International has dined, sort of chivvied up with Starbucks to give us contactless payment systems. Now, Square are the people that started off by making little blocks that went on the base of your iPhone and turned them into readers for cash receipts and swipe cards and that kind of stuff. They've now ventured out into the smartphone contact payless area, and they've signed this big deal that Starbucks is going to be the place that you can use for contact payment. It's the first one of its kind. An epic partnership, says Howard Schultz and Jack Dorsey.
I think the thing here is it reminded me of a story I saw some time ago, because I know Barclays are also been looking at something like this, and there was a big thing about it a while ago. I'm forgetting the name of the technology. The chat room might be able to help out.
Ping, but, or was it Ping?
Yeah, it might be actually.
Barclays Ping is transfer of payments.
Yeah, I think that's something slightly different. But the point is with this, I think it's a big thing because it's the first retailer to make a really big issue out of it, and therefore I think it might actually happen. And in that respect, I think this is quite a significant story, especially such a big chain as Starbucks, significant enough. Although, interestingly enough, they're only saying in the US at the moment. I assume it's just they want to trial it in the US before they consider utilizing it elsewhere in the world.
Don't piss off the rest of the world.
Putting my cynic hat on, and this is very cynical, bear with me.
But,
you know, financial regulations are at their weakest in the US. So if you're wondering about the security of a new technology, probably best to try it there.
Oh, yeah, no chip and PIN in the US.
No, absolutely.
I mean, the notion of having wireless technology whooshing around your money just by being near to you scares the absolute pants off me. You couldn't pay me to do this kind of thing.
And it is an example. I mean, it's just like the privacy thing where we're letting these companies, these really big guys, go forward without having a real understanding of what the downsides are, without having any legal framework to be recompensated for certain privacy breaches, like the Sony network, you know, just lost everything and you didn't get compensated for that. Social security number, had to change your credit card numbers, all that stuff. These things just happen and they go, oops, and move on. And I don't think that should really be allowed. But the thing about Starbucks here, I'm sure the reason they're doing this is because for years they've been trying to get away from those very lucrative Visa and MasterCard and American Express and the credit card fees that come with every swipe of that credit card, whatever you buy, you know, $1.50 coffee, and then Visa gets 75 cents of that, or maybe even more. So they want to really cut down on that. What I've noticed they have always done here is they have a Starbucks card that they encourage everyone to go to, because then you get coupons and discounts and gold club points and all this stuff, but you have to prepay online in large increments. You have to refill this card. So then every transaction that goes from then on is bypassing Visa or MasterCard and going straight to Starbucks. So I suspect that the reason they partnered with Square on this is because Square is such a new and small company. They needed a big client, a big rollout partner like Starbucks. In exchange, I'll guarantee you Starbucks is getting a much better price per payment than they would get from the commission taken by Visa or MasterCard. So I think the Starbucks' interest is purely to escape the credit card company's fees.
Actually, and they're particularly vulnerable to them because, you know, in a supermarket, you can say you can't pay by credit card unless your basket is at least £10. You can't do that in a Starbucks. You'd have no customers.
Mm.
Yeah.
So it's tiny transactions. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, we've got technologies for things like that. I mean, in London, we've got the Oyster card. I know in the US, in some cities, you actually have the same sort of idea where you can pay with a card that you top up on metro systems in various cities. I know because I've experienced it in Boston and San Francisco. You know, and so it's just moving that technology onto something that we're more likely to carry around with us, like iPhone, which I think is a really good idea.
There's one downside to that. When you follow the Hacker News, what you keep on seeing is that those transit cards keep getting hacked. Like, you know, at Black Hat conferences, there's been talks that had to be cancelled due to legal threats from transport authorities because they were about to say, and this is how you travel free forever. So if that's the same technology coming over, that's not necessarily what you want.
Now, the Oyster card is RFID. How does RFID...
That's full of security issues.
Well, exactly. But, it's not strictly NFC. Is it?
There's
a separation here.
You know, you're going to have security issues with anything. I mean, look at a credit card. It's a little magnetic stripe, and you can fully duplicate it just by typing the number and the three-digit security code, and you've spoofed that RFID even faster than an actual RFID spoofer would take, because it's just a number and a magnetic strip. So I think crucially to this, and that's why, again, I look at the big companies and I say, if you're going to be the only one or two companies on the planet that takes the processes of credit card payments, you have to guarantee lack of liability. You know, there has to be some kind of deal worked out where it's safe for customers to use these payment mechanisms, where the customer, the little guy, doesn't get totally screwed over if the big guy is running fast and loose with the security measures.
Yeah, I mean, this thing is talking about doing near-field communication for the debiting from smartphones. Also, the Starbucks app, Jenks is saying in the chat room, has got a barcode that the barista scans, and then that debits it off your account, which is I have to call this up, I have to show you this barcode, you have to physically scan it, is a lot more secure than wafting your phone near some kind of receiver. I mean, the place I was at today, I've got a card for there because I go there so often, and I load it up with money, and then I waft it around in the lunch queue, and they take whatever they want off it, and I never look at how much is taken off. But as Bart says there, you know, that spoofing of how much they take off, how much is on there, is dead easy to do. But there's also a good point in the chat room here that Jimmy the Greek says, but you let your card go off with a waiter in a restaurant quite happily, which is 10 times worse.
Yeah, right. that doesn't happen as much these days because they tend to bring them to the
desk. In the UK, because to spoof a card is not the benefit. You need the PIN. Just running it through a reader won't necessarily do it for you.
Yeah,
whereas
in
the States, just run you can still spoof cards the way they were doing it 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what I mean. So we're totally at the mercy of Visa's 0% liability guarantee, which I haven't really looked into it, but I've heard horror stories of that not being followed through with. But yeah, any new technology, my point is you've got the biggest companies like that saying, this is safe, go with us on this, trust us on this, But then when something does go wrong and a privacy breach happens, they say, oops, sorry, let's just move on. All your data was lost or whatever happened, and they have no liability over anything.
I mean, Tony in the chat room saying you'd hope that such a system would still require a PIN code and a quoted amount like chip and PIN. But you have no chip and PIN by regulation, do you, Eric?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Exactly. There's my point.
Yeah. No.
If you've got to ask me what chip and PIN's about, mate, you ain't got it. So basically,
all you need for a credit card. I mean, there's a lot of websites.
Swipe and sign.
There's a lot of video sites where, like a RiffTrax or something, where you don't even need anything besides. I don't know why I'm talking about them, but just anything. There's a lot of stuff where the only thing you need is the number and the security code, and you can charge anything you want to that, even if you don't have the address.
Not least of which over the phone.
Right.
That
right.
doesn't happen in Europe. You can't do that.
Well, tell me, now I have to know, what is a chip and PIN?
A chip and PIN is basically you go into the gas station to pay for your petrol, and
fry and a ballpoint?
No, they don't take your card. They don't take your card off you and swipe it. You insert it into a machine. The machine asks you for a PIN code, and you have to put in your four digit PIN code, and then it will authorize it or reject it. And then you get your receipt, and then you take it out. They never get to touch your card, and that's the way you should always be. They in restaurants now, they should come up with a remote payment reader, and you shove it in, and they type the amount in, and then you take your card out. There's nowhere anywhere in the UK that a retailer should be able to touch your card and take it off you.
And wow, online, I can't use my card online pretty much anywhere without getting the verified by Visa thing, where I have to enter three random digits from a password that I have to create before I can use the card online.
Which is good.
Verified by Visa is good as long as you remember the code. If you're slightly out on the code, it's a horrific process to try and get it rectified if you get it wrong, especially three times. But I've got to say, once I change my passcode to a string of expletives, I have not a problem.
How long do you think it will be, by the way? I mean, I'm assuming you have these, Eric, in the US, where you have these little calculator things, particularly use it for bank accounts over here. And I know you do in Ireland as well, where you have to put your debit card into there. If you're going online, or particularly with your bank, if you're doing certain things like setting up payees for transfers and stuff like that, you put the card in this like little calculator thing. It gives you a code. And you type that into
your PIN.
Yeah, sorry, you have to enter your PIN, and then you enter the code that the bank account, the bank give you into this thing. It gives you another 8-digit number. You type that back in. Thank you, Ewan.
It's the hell that is kind that? Of thing.
It's exactly what we were just saying.
We have nothing at all like this. I don't know what this is.
Everyone now knows that I bank with Barclays.
Yeah, that's why I'm not. I've got about half banking. A dozen different ones of these, Ewan, from different banks, including an Irish bank.
I've never seen or heard of this in my life.
But well, it's
basically okay,
so it takes it to another level.
You're you. It uses this idea of two-factor authentication, something you know and something you have. So you have to have your card, your ATM card, and you have to know the PIN, or you cannot do any transactions online. You can't set up a new payment. So if you steal someone's, if you have a keylogger on someone's machine and you log into their bank and you try to transfer all of their money to you, you can't unless you also have the PIN in this machine.
Oh, so, wow. I don't think we have anything like that.
I think it's also with Lloyd's TSB, certainly business banking, you actually need it to log into the account.
Let's go for a quick demonstration for the benefit of all our non-UK listeners. So,
are you sure this is a good idea?
No. I get my card that I've covered the number of. I'm not stupid. There we go. And basically, when you go on the website, it says, what's the last five digits of the card that you put in? So you type in the last five card digits. And then you plug the thing in, and it comes up, and it says, right, what do you want to do? And you say, I want to identify myself. I want to respond to a request from the website, or I want to sign for a transaction, which is what they'll ask you to do. When you've put it in and you've hit the identify button, it asks for your passcode. So you put in your passcode, your four-pin digit code, and then it will give you an 8-digit code that you then enter into the website. And how the algorithm works, I'm sure someone could probably work it out, but it's based on the card that you put in with the PIN number. I'm going to have to blank that because I've just shown my number. And I am that stupid. And,
the thing is, it's a one-time code, so those 8 digits are different every single time. So keylogger is defeated.
It's of no use.
Do you know the really scary thing about these guys?
Has one of these?
Yeah,
it's becoming prolific. Most people use online banking. Do you know the really scary thing about these guys? And I know we're slightly off topic here, but it is technology, is that those readers work with any bank account. So if you've got one of those machines, you can use it with any other bank account in the UK and in Ireland as well. I know because I've done it.
Yeah, but this is so weird. It's like such a bizarre little cultural divide. It's like, wait, everyone, all you guys have like these little calculator things? I've never even heard of this.
I've got about three or four of them, Eric.
I've never even heard of this. I've had numerous credit cards and debit cards. No bank has ever offered this or told it to me. I've seen no one who ever owns or has one of these.
Would you like me to send you one? Would you like me to send you one, Eric? I've got a spare.
It wouldn't mean much good, but
I've got a spare. No, but the beauty of these things is, as well, so I've got this little device here, and I go down to a place where I'm working, and one
I just realised I'm not going to show it, because it shows what bank I bank with, so...
I've done it, you chicken. So anyway, I've...
All right then, okay.
So I go down to a place where I've worked this week, and I'm down there frantically hunting through my bag, looking for my little calculator that I've forgotten to take with me.
Here you go, Eric, just for your benefit.
There we go. And the guy next to me is also in Barclays. He's got one of these. And I say to him, can I borrow your little calculator machine thing? And he says, yes, no worries. And he gives it to me. And I put my card in and I get my code and I log into the website and I give it him back. He doesn't make any difference to him whatsoever, because he can't do anything with anything that I've typed in this thing. It will work with absolutely anyone else's bank account if you've got one of these things. But the data doesn't record any data, it doesn't pass any data, it doesn't do anything at all with an interaction with the website other than give you this 8-digit passcode, and it means you can use this anywhere you like.
Yeah, it's Eric, it's like the card that you put in it, seed set.
Yeah. It doesn't work. I mean, the actual display doesn't come up unless you've put the card. I'm going to send you one, Eric. I'm going to send you this one. Send me an address via email. I will post you a Barclays PIN Sentry, and you will have your own and you can show it on the show.
I just think that's so funny. Like, well, we all have these things. Everyone has one. What is that? I've never even seen that.
You can see Eric walking into a bar in Petaluma going, hello? Yeah. Yeah. Hang on a second. Yeah, no, this. No, it's the new iPhone.
I'll leave it behind you.
It was found in a bar. Scratch the Barclays off with a pin. There you go. Hello? Hello? Yeah, no, it's the new iPhone. There we go.
That's got to be the title for the show, Ewan.
The new iPhone.
Us back on topic, iPhone, perhaps. Yeah.
Sorry again?
To swing us back towards the topic, perhaps.
What on earth would we do that for?
The topic?
The point being that actually security technology really has come on a long way in the sort of the things we're used to. But these new technologies are unproven as of yet. And I think that there needs to be some more evidence that these things are safe before people just start doing it. Now, maybe the way you do that is that you do it sort of as a top-up system, so that if there is a security problem, you can never lose more than what you pre-add up. But if it's an actual debit card that has access to the entirety of your fortune, that's not good.
No.
Now, that we do have. Anywhere that you use a debit card, whether it's a grocery store or a restaurant or anywhere, they do require you here to type in your bank account PIN number as if you were accessing an ATM. But credit cards, you hand it to someone, they walk off, they come back. No questions asked.
I love our debit cards, how you think of it. That's chip and pin is basically turn our credit cards into debit cards, and then you understand chip and pin.
Eric goes, credit card theft. Oh, yeah, we have that. We have that here. Yeah, no question. We have that here. Definitely applies. we have people that steal your money. That's a Barclays one.
I can't see
if
the video's really delayed. I'm still looking at Bart talking.
It looks the same as mine.
Okay, now I see it. Now that you got the white one and you have the little, the other one. That's funny. Everyone has like 10 of these.
Right, we will get one sent to you, mate. I promise you. There you go.
You have to open a bank account with £1 in it just so I can get one of those.
I did have an American bank account for a while. I had $275 in it. I opened it 10 years ago and I closed it probably about a year ago, because I haven't been out to the States for ages, and it was with Co-America, is that right?
With who?
Co-America?
Co-America?
No?
I don't think so. I
still have my account from when I lived out there until about 5-10 years ago, I think.
And they gave me back $285.
Interesting.
I was pretty chuffed with that.
How the hell did you get interest on that?
I don't know. I thought
you hadn't got an SSN number, so there's no way you could get interest on it.
I got interest. I got more back than I put in.
Ooh.
There we go. See? Mm. The Samsung Galaxy Note is upon us, it would seem. There's got a revision 2 that's out. Now, there's a Pakistani website, which sounds like a joke's about to come. So there was this Pakistani website, right? And they've released an image that is supposed to be, allegedly, the new Galaxy Note. And if it is true, it's gorgeous. It really is. I mean, it's super stunning. What do we think? Could this be the Galaxy Note?
Yeah, I mean, looking at this, then it's got 5 applications across. Yeah, it's about the same size. Was that 5 or 6 on the original Galaxy Note?
You've got a slight delay on the feed there. That was the original, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, that one that I showed there was the original with Our Happy Moment on it.
And the Sydney Harbour Bridge.
Yeah, yeah. The Sydney Harbour Bridge one. Now, that is supposedly, potentially... is this the Samsung Galaxy Note, writes Engadget? It's an image posted on an official site, but it looks worryingly familiar to a previous concept that was shown. A strange one. The Samsung Pakistan site just posted the above pic on its official Facebook page, and the caption reads, "Perfect picture view made even more perfect with Samsung Galaxy S3, but the picture is clearly not a GS3.
It looks good. That's an amazing width screen, isn't it? It's virtually right to the edge.
Well, that's why it looks a little bit fake, actually. If it is, you know, they have to prove that this is doable before we know for sure that it's not fake.
Would you want it to be sensitive right to the edge? How are you supposed to hold the device without clicking on everything?
Good point.
From the back.
From the back, I see. You rest it comes it with a glove. You just slide it on.
Oh, yeah, there's a thought. I mean, if that... really is true. If it's up to the edge display, that's cutting edge. I mean, that's. I think of all the devices that are out there at the moment, there's definitely a two-tier system, isn't there? There's the iPad over there doing what it does, and then there's all these other pads fighting for the scraps at the bottom. But the one thing that stands out, and I haven't gone and bought one, so it doesn't stand out enough for me to do that, but the Galaxy Note, there's something about the Galaxy Note as a phone that I'm sitting thinking, you know, wire me up with a decent battery life Bluetooth headset, and I really could make the jump. No?
Well, why not?
I mean, Sarah, you're already an Android user. You've got the Nexus.
Yes. No, don't talk to me about Jelly Bean.
Okay.
Give me back ice cream sandwich anywhere, any day.
Right. But, I mean, doesn't the Note appeal to you?
Oh, yes. It's until the S3 came out recently, the Galaxy Note was the only phone that surpassed my Nexus S, which I've now had for over 18 months in terms of what's come out that I've actually wanted.
Right.
And I've actually had a play with the Galaxy Note, and it's amazing. If I hadn't got the Nexus S, I would definitely have bought one.
Now, are you guys iPhone users?
Yeah.
Eric?
Yep, got one right here.
So, again, nothing tempting you away from the iPhone?
No. The big screen's bad as far as I'm concerned. I don't have big hands.
Okay, Bart, small hands.
No, seriously though, I need to be able to hold the phone in one hand and have my thumb touch all 4 corners of the touchscreen. If I can't do that, the phone's too big.
So, right. How do you type a message on it? Don't you get fed up with a small keyboard?
No. Maybe it's because I just ring people. Strange concept.
But... so, doesn't that destroy the whole point of what we're talking about in terms of?
Well,
the
no, because it's my
smartphone.
I use 1,000,001 apps.
The keyboard is the number one thing that irritates me on smartphones these days. That's when I said earlier on about the fact that I played with the Nexus 7, the first thing I started looking at on that was the keyboard and how good it is. Is it the right size? And that's when I actually decided, no, this is not going to be good enough. I probably need to go to a 10-inch, so I'm waiting for the right 10-inch to come along.
Yeah, that's very big.
10 inches is a huge leap, though, from the Note. I mean, the Note is at 5 inches as a pseudo phone cum tablet. It's got a space in the market, I think, that no one else fills, and it does appeal, certainly.
Well, a 10-inch screen is described as a full-size iPad.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not talking about a phone. I'm talking about in terms of a tablet, obviously. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then the Galaxy Note, if the second one is the same size as the other one, I know it's not my expression, but it's halfway between a tablet and a phone, called a phablet.
Which is, in my opinion, not very fab, but... Well, for a start, the name isn't fab anyway.
Why would you have a phablet's an awful phrase. Good God, I can't believe I let you say that. All right, fine. I thought that was an interesting story, but stuff the lot of you. The FAA says, do not fear the drones. Now, this is one of yours, Eric. The Federal Aviation Administration is suggesting that you haven't got to worry about drones. They're not going to interfere with domestic traffic, so we won't be bringing planes down. And, of course, people's privacy will be affected, won't be affected. You scared, boy? You should be.
I'm just hearing about this now.
The phrase that leaps to mind is, what could possibly go wrong?
Exactly. Go on, Sarah.
No, I was just going to say about what happens. I know we're slightly getting into the conspiracy theory area, but what happens if somebody else takes over those drones, control of the drones?
Well, there was a thing about drone hacking the other week, but there was apparently that's not particularly easy to do. It was
But is it feasible? And think of the damage it could do.
Well, you know, that's the premise of some new high-profile video game that's either coming out or already just has come out, of a first-person shooter. I saw the trailer and it's like, I don't know. I don't think it's Modern Warfare, but it's something of a similar big name like that. But the premise is, I think I've actually mentioned this on the show before, but what if we build the Terminators and we build the big robots, like the ones that you walk in and stuff like that, drones, all this stuff. And then the bad guys get a hold of that. And now suddenly we've built the robot army that will destroy us, even though they had been the tools of our weaponry, even though they were unmanned and not fully intelligent, all this stuff. What if someone else gets access to that and hacks it and then turns it against us? That's a danger.
Yeah, which is very realistic.
And I know we talk about...
this thing's weigh 55 pounds, dude. One of them cuts out and decides it's going to fall to Earth. What stops it? And these things... These are 300 to 500 feet in the sky. And they're hovering around by some remote operator. If it gets an engine failure, it's 55 pounds. That's the smaller systems. Unmanned aircraft at 55 pounds have got release in 2012 for deployment by 2014. And they're going to allow larger systems by 2015 in domestic environments. These things are going to be flying over residences patrolling. And it's 55 pounds, 25 kilos.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you think about it, we talk about computer systems failing and so on and so forth. And notice it's always the computer system failing, not that somebody actually screwed something up that meant that it failed. Most of the time, that doesn't have much consequence. It's a bit inconvenient, but that's the way it is. But if something like this happens, bang, that's going to, you know, if it lands on somebody's house, serious damage.
Your government is for the people... Not adverse to the people. How many people want remote drones flying over their neighborhoods?
What's their mission? I haven't really even heard about this. What are they supposed to be flying to do?
To seek out brave new worlds, to boldly go.
There's no one mission. The idea is to use this for all sorts of applications. You know, from making sure that farmers are not breaking some sort of law with how they plant their crops. Making sure that you can use it to track wildlife, you could use it to, you know, basically keep an eye on city neighborhoods. I mean, it could be used for anything. The FAA is going to make it the rules on how you integrate computer-driven doohickeys with air traffic control so that they don't run into each other.
With massive overcrowding in British prisons, we're going to use drones to check whether a farm has planted the wrong crops.
Hang on a sec. If you're in America where you have the large middle states, they're not small. You could pay a man to drive for days and days and days and he wouldn't get much done, or you could fly over for an hour.
But Bart, what you're describing seems like you could figure out like 90% of that stuff using Google Earth. So doesn't the government already have satellites that supposedly can read the headlines off a newspaper, if not better? Why do you need an individual drone flying over each smaller location?
That's a really good point. I guess for crime fighting, you want real time, which you can't get from a satellite because you just get a snapshot every time one passes by.
Yeah. You get a but few.
For, yeah, for the other agricultural stuff, you're dead right. Why not just use satellite pictures?
Because wheat grows slow enough for passing the things that come over every 90 minutes.
Yeah, or we can just send out the Google driverless car.
Chat room says there's a story from Maxis saying EPA drones are now spying on Midwest farmers' livestock activities. Could we keep a drone to check on government officials?
I wasn't going to say that, but I was thinking it too.
And Jenks in the chat room says also that, where's it gone? Maybe they're hoping to find Sasquatch in the Pacific Northwest using one.
Bigfoot drone.
What is currently going on in the US scares the crap out of me, mate. Because they are doing whatever the hell they like to make it virtually impossible to gain entry into the nation. I'm probably not going to be refused next time I try and get in now. just for having said that. But, the open visa system has gone. So you can't use a visa waiver anymore to get in. Oh, hang on a second. Yeah, you actually can, but you need to fill a form out first to apply to use the free entry visa waiver system.
I think the people in charge of that are just like, they're just clutching their knees, shivering. They're just so scared of everyone in the world.
You mean the TSA?
I guess. Well, it's more than just that, but yeah.
But they're scared of you. The government is spying on its own population without judicial oversight. That's what we're talking about.
And we got a Democrat president in the White House.
There is no judicial oversight in most Western nations now. The Supreme Court here in the UK that's been set up is null and void, effectively, to the way that the Parliament runs. And you have to have judicial oversight to limit the powers of politicians, because otherwise you are going to be bent over and rogered rigid, mate. And that's what's happening to you in the States. Jimmy the Greek says, I live in the States, and it scares the crap out of me too.
But they've got a Democrat in the White House.
Yeah, which is even more scary.
This is not bipartisan. This has got nothing to do with the lines that are drawn party-wise.
Bipartisan?
No, it's not nothing to do with it. It's to do with the fact that it's your government bodies who are unfettered by the representatives that you have, or who are controlled by the representatives that you have, who do what the hell they like without any judicial oversight.
Person who makes it to president, who gets it to sit in the Oval Office, is going to say, you know what I need? I need less power. So whatever power is accumulated by your predecessors, you take that. I mean, Obama doesn't. And you might add to it a little. I mean, Obama did, for the first time, go around executing Americans without any sort of actual warrant or anything. So that's kind of a scary development. So that's his addition. Bush set him up with all the surveillance powers he wants. And then whoever takes over next, whether it's Obama 2 or Romney, they're going to take all of that power and add another little bit to it. And it just creeps forward.
Yeah, Romney gets in. If you're walking down the street in a berry, you're screwed. One of these things will zap you.
I mean, it really doesn't even matter that it's technically a Democratic White House right now, because the policy set in the Bush era of just extreme surveillance and unlimited wiretapping and all this stuff, we never went back. I mean, you can't. It's not even politically correct to question the modern security policies that Bush and those guys installed after September 11th. You can't even question the Patriot Act anymore. People say, why do you care about that? That was like 10 years ago. And no one realizes that, well, it's still enforced. All that stuff is still on the books. What was so controversial 10 years ago is now business as usual. Well, that's just how it is. That's how our laws are. That's the world we live in now.
We got the same thing over here, Rick. It's exactly the same here. There was a load of stuff that went on around the same time, and also 7/7 as well, and they used it to bring in all sorts of legislation.
Yeah, and it just shows. I mean, there are so many reasons. I get very nervous when you have these things, because I mean, no one follows every law to the letter at all points. I mean, can anyone here honestly say that when they drive their car, they don't speed ever for even a fraction of a second? You follow all speed limits to the sign, right down to, okay, Ewan's raising his hand, but anyone besides you?
I don't drive, so I definitely don't do any of those things.
I just imagine laws, for various reasons, that obviously a separate discussion, but take speed limits as the clearest, easiest example. The laws and the system that we have were not designed to be data gathered and I keep saying executing. There's no one innocent. They're executing you. But the point is, if every law was 100% enforced at all times, like if, you know, every speed limit, you'd have pandemonium because you'd have everyone getting tickets, you know, 25 times a day. The laws, the system to change the laws. Just imagine if you could never go over the speed limit ever. Imagine how many people would be at their local courthouse saying, well, look at this. You've got an unreasonably slow speed limit here, and this one's too fast. And you'd be all this measuring it up. We don't have that system yet. Until we can get to a system, and I don't know what in the world this would be, but just something.
Are you going to bring this back to drones at any point, Eric, by the way? Because you've lost me.
Well, so you see what I'm saying, though?
No, I really don't.
Something. You can always get something for somebody at any time of the day, no matter what they're doing, no matter how safe they're being. There's something, they broke the speed limit or just something ridiculous like that, or they downloaded a song off the internet. And when you have unlimited capabilities, or they said a special keyword that you know, they said the word bomb and near an airplane or something, and that tipped something off. You know, all these ridiculous things that have nothing to do with anyone's security, but can be used against you just immediately and going forward forever, you know, everything recorded forever. And you can just be, they can just look into the past to see something. Oh, well, on this date, you did this or that. You have this unpaid parking ticket. It just, there's no end to it.
But this can be used, like if they gather all this information on all of us, they could just store it, a big puddle of data. And then you do something that makes the government cranky. So then they say, well, let's go into this puddle of data and let's get them for everything we can.
Exactly.
One opponent aside. You just keep doing
it. It's the modern equivalent of planting something when you get stopped, isn't it? By the police.
You just gather everything and then selectively decide who is your enemy and who you're going to use this information against. It's very scary. And so I'm reminded of it. Are you guys familiar with the Yes Minister?
Yeah, oh yeah. God, yeah.
There's a great scene in Yes Minister where they're talking about the difference between the government, politicians, and the civil servants. And it's impermanence is impotence. Permanence is power, or something to that effect. Basically, because the civil servants are the same civil servants administration after administration after administration, and the politicians come and go, the politicians don't have the power. The power goes with the people who are always in the job.
It's the people like the FAA, the FCC, and those kind of, the CIA, the FBI, those are the people that have real power over government, and they have real power over the population as a result, and they act unfettered, and that's the situation that you're getting to, mate. I really am scared for the... I would love to come back to the USA again and see all of my family. However, the USA is not, or was not, the enemy. But everything that it's done since the terrorist attacks, it is making itself into something which is undesirable and targetable. And it shouldn't be. It should be acting more, right? We know you're out there, and it should be doing what the Israelis do, which is, you know, that they're you don't even know that you're being sized up by them when you go in. They are tracking
unless
you from
they
30,
find you bad. And you know very quickly.
Yeah. You are 30 yards away before and they catch you before you even get anywhere near the place.
And my point is now law enforcement can now happen at fiber optic speed. Changing laws, making them 100% fair and reasonable and just, still takes 10, 20, 30, 50 years.
Yeah.
So until we get some kind of tightening up of that time window, we have to be very careful about the rapid speed and the drones and the cameras on the streets and all this stuff. If actually saying, hey, that's not fair, or I didn't do that, actually takes, you know, years and years, but that takes half a second.
Yeah, not only that, but it's also the level of understanding of the politicians as well, of this kind of stuff.
Sure.
You have record-breaking levels of obstructionism in government at the same time as you have record-breaking leaps forward in technology. More filibusters than ever, making it impossible for the government to do anything. At the same time, technology races ahead. That's a very bad combination.
It is.
Yep.
But the point I was going to make to you is be careful about throwing stones in glass houses.
I'm not saying that the UK is a lot better.
No. We've got
Rapier missiles on top of blocks of flats where there's kids chewing dummies at the moment because of the Olympics.
Okay, but take a step back.
It's rubbish.
You have the European Union telling all the ISPs to keep data for a decade and all that kind of stuff. You know, our data retention laws and stuff, we're at it too. We're just being really quiet about it.
Today's podcast is really freaking me out.
And it's really long as well. We need to bring it to a close.
I know.
Last word, I think the chat room's already coming out with potential titles. The show.
I think we've had a ton of them.
Yeah, but Tone has got the last word here, without a doubt. the last person who walked into the Houses of Parliament with honest intentions was Guy Fawkes. Now that may be truer than you know.
Yes.
This podcast and all the others that we've got are brought to you by UK2.net. They are really, really superb. They look after us like you wouldn't believe. And without them, we really would be stuffed. They give us all the bandwidth to absorb all the shows. We've had as high a couple of months ago. I mean, we're on a bit of a summer recess at the moment, so downloads are down a bit, which has happened last year. But in July, we actually consumed 24 terabytes of bandwidth, which was just unbelievable. They never say a word. They just pick it all up. They're good as gold. And they love you because you're apparently buying a lot of stuff off them. Loads and loads of BTN listeners are using the click-through, and loads of BTN listeners are using the offer codes and getting great reductions on what they get from UK2. UK2 are very happy. They've signed up with us for another 2 years because they're so happy with what we provide and what you guys take off them. If you want anything from UK2, anything for web, domains, VPS, VPN, dedicated servers, sharing on servers, anything like that, co-location services, go to BritishTechNetwork.com and then click on the UK2 link. That takes you through to their site. It'll open it in a new tab. Go back to the British Tech site and you'll be able to get the sponsors codes on the sponsors link, and then enter those codes in before you put your payment details in, and you'll get tons of stuff. Some of the stuff is free if you use the offer code. So please support UK2 because they support us, and you are. Thank you very much for those that have bought stuff from them. Also, I mean, we've got donations. We don't have any other advertising on the network at all. So if you can chuck a donation our way, you can sign up on the website, buy the network a beer each month. We'd be very grateful. It all goes into buying the tech for the place. It doesn't go into buying beer. It's just an idea that Carl had ages ago. But it'll help support the network and keep us running. If you would like to give a donation, please do. Thank you very much if you have. And thanks especially to those whose donations have renewed this week. Again, it's fantastic. We really do require it and are very, very grateful. It's time for the cool thing. Do you have cool things, Mr. Bouchotz?
Oh, nothing. I forgot about this bit.
You forgot about this?
Well, no, it's fine.
Should we come back to it? Oh, okay.
Get back to me, but I'll have found something on my home screen within 2 minutes.
Let's start then, for the first time for a long time, with Sarah. You better
ask me. Hey, I get to be number one for a change.
Yeah, no one steals your picks anyway, because they're usually some geeky web thing that's free.
No, I try to make them obscure enough so that actually no one has a chance of nicking them. It's only on the F1 show that I have a chance of somebody nicking my magic moment, which does happen from time to time. But normally I'm okay with this. So anyway, this week, I've been playing with a new Linux distro, not new as in new, but as in new as in new to me, that somebody recommended to me, called Linux Mint. Now, that's not the cool thingy. The cool thingy is something that actually, a piece of software that actually allows me to install it on one of these. You probably know that's a USB stick. So I can actually carry it around and run it on that rather than actually having to install it on my PC, which is really useful when I'm trying to evaluate it. Anyway, this piece of software is called a Universal USB Installer. I've put a link in the chat room for those people that are interested. But it's very simple. Unfortunately, it only runs on, the actual software only runs on Windows. But what it does, if you've actually downloaded the ISO for your favorite flavor of Linux, then what you do is just run this software on Windows, point it at the file, tell it where your USB stick is, and voila, it will actually build a bootable USB drive with that distro for you. It is absolutely ace, very simple, quick, does the job, and it's free.
Excellent. Good pick. Thank you very much. Mr. Lanigan, what have you got?
I hate to do a depressing one after this.
Well, the chat room reckons you're coming out with
upbeat episode today.
Well, the chat room reckons that you're coming out with a tinfoil hat, so anything's going to be a lump up on that. Go ahead.
No, I come today to mourn the loss of a former cool thing. Ewan, when you set up a new Macintosh and you are downloading the first set of software for the fresh installation of OS X, what's one of the first things you download that is QuickTime related? Think.
What do I download? I don't know.
QuickTime components to play universal formats.
I don't. I use VLC.
Okay. Well, I use that. Well, that's what you have to use now because Parian is no more. You never used Parian?
I never used Parian.
Yeah, I loved it.
Okay, Bart loved it. Okay, so your Mac user, great. So you should be sad about this. Parian is no more. I went to the site. I went to update it because after Mountain Lion, I saw that the AC3 audio stopped working. That's the Dolby Digital audio. No longer plays in Parian and Mountain Lion. And I went to check for updates and saw the notice on the website saying that they're closing their doors. They're stopping development. They didn't say why. And they offered some alternatives that you can try, but they're not really plug-in solutions. It looks like, as of now, no one is making a plug-in, a set of components, QuickTime plugins to play formats like that, to sort of make QuickTime like VLC. Not as disappointing to me as it would have been in the past, because VLC recently got a major upgrade that has made it really my default media player now for anything HD. Anything like that is way better now in VLC, including it has that dynamic range compressor. There's all these awesome features now. I even just discovered a world of keyboard shortcuts I didn't even know about, where functions that didn't, for zooming and cropping and subtitle turning off and deinterlacing, cycling, that all this stuff didn't even exist. So you can really play some Blu-ray titles that really just sing in VLC, but unfortunately not anymore in Parian. So that's my eulogy to Parian, parian.org. And if you're our developer or hobbyist who knows this stuff, maybe you can take a shot at trying to carry on the project. But as of now, it was nice knowing you.
Oh dear. Bad luck, mate. Do we have to have a minute's silence now? No? Okay.
That's never good on a podcast.
No, it's not, actually. That's good listening. Well, let's do a minute's silence right now.
I just talked right through the minute's silence.
Away you go, Bart.
Right. Having looked through my Mac App Store recent purchases, I'm going to say that Redshift for Mac is really cool. This is an astronomy app for showing you what's in the sky, but the graphics are stunning on it. And it's a very, very old app in the sense that Redshift have been doing this stuff since the days of DOS, and they were always king of the hill, and they were priced appropriately. But they seem to have realized that if they bring their prices down to sort of more reasonable values, they'll make up for it in volume. So for a whopping €6.99, you now get what I would have always considered to be a pro astronomy app. And I'm just blown away by how good the graphics on it look, on a modern Mac. So Redshift from the Mac App Store. And I guess, there's still Redshift for other platforms too, so it's a good product anyway, but the price on the Mac App Store is impressive.
Excellent. A good choice. I'm trying to get my
Redshift, does that come from the Doppler effect of light?
I presume that's where the name comes from, yeah.
Isn't Redshift, like Stephen Hawking discovered that like things it show a red cast as they expand? Isn't that true? That's like how he discovered that the universe is expanding?
It wasn't him, actually. You should give the credit to an American, not to Stephen Hawking. A chap called Edwin Hubble. You called the telescope after him.
Oh, of course.
Hubble. So basically what he did was he measured the distance to galaxies using other methods, and then measured the redshifts and found that there's an exact correlation between how quickly stuff is moving away from us and how far away from us it actually is, which means that the whole universe is expanding. And it also means that if you want to measure the distance of something, you just look at its redshift, and that can be reverse calculated to how far away it is.
So in other words, pretty cool name for an astronomy app.
Yes, very appropriate name and a very cool American connection.
If you enjoyed that bit of the podcast, get a life. Oh my God. Oh, that was geeky. That was real geek.
We've had a bit of that tonight, Ewan.
Sorry?
This is a geek podcast, right?
I guess kind of, yeah.
Ewan is casting a redshift as he slowly backs away from the podcast.
I don't know.
I think we're doing that tonight.
We're well over time.
It's definitely geeky.
My up yours ranking, says Jinx. Thank you. My pick is the Monster Clarity HD sound speaker. This thing is rechargeable, battery powered. Yeah, it's already in it. You don't have to add it. It's Bluetooth, so it links to anything that you've got that's Bluetooth. It sits in the car. It's got a separate volume control on the side, which isn't limited to the volume control that's on your iOS device or your Android phone. So you can add and take it up well above that. And the sound output from this thing is immense. It is gorgeous, reasonably, very good quality. The bass end's excellent. It's not up to Bose, but it's not a million miles away. It's £69.99, so it's not cheap. But once you've charged it up, it lasts for about 15 hours of playback. And you just carry it around with you. Just switch it on and off at the back and toss it in the car. toss it on your bed when you're getting dressed in the morning and play it out of your iPad or whatever. And the sound quality is superb. And I was going to... Russ is in the chat room, and Russ sent through the music for Downloads by Monday, and I was going to play you a bit of Downloads by Monday to kind of whet your appetite for what's coming, but he's got to re-record all the music on it. But I can't get it to download on my iPad to play it, and it's not linked to anything else, so I'm afraid I haven't got it.
Was that the one that debuted at the Bash?
That is the one that debuted at the Bash, yeah, so there you go. Let's try and find a piece of music. Oh, no, that's not it. Bruce Hornsby, that'll do.
Yeah, and his range.
And his range.
The way it is.
He's not the way. I can play the way it is if you want.
Yeah, I love that bit of music. If you're talking that artist, why not? Great piece of music.
Go way back in time, we're going to do something on our first record.
He probably isn't going to come out as...
Oh, is it live?
It's a live album.
Yeah, cool.
It's actually coming out of the iPad. I'm not getting it out of the speaker at the minute. Oh, well, bollocks.
Looks like he's got it looks like he's got a level meter on the front of it as well.
No, those are Bluetooth? Blue charge and link and that kind of stuff.
So. Oh, okay.
By the way, Ewan, speaking of unlimited lightning fast law enforcement, you'll now be sued for $150,000, the maximum fine for that unlicensed copyright.
Oh, no, I don't switch it off.
Surveillance.
You
chuck it across the room.
There we go. I switched it off. God.
Unlimited surveillance.
I'll play you Downloads by Monday after the show if you're in the chat room. There you go. But that's my pick. Thank you very much for listening. Where can we get a hold of you all? Bart.
Well, you can find my personal website at bartb.ie, and you can, should you want to, hear more of me on the International Mac Podcast at iampodcast.com.
Good man. You haven't promoted your podcast much when you've been on it before, and you should.
I know, Stu gets cranky at me when I don't promote the show.
You bloody should. I get cranky. Sarah, where can we get you, missus?
You can get hold of me on the Twitters at SarahJaneUK, and talking of plugs, also on the F1 show and the web show on this network.
Well, the web show's not coming back for another month, or the F1 show's not coming back.
Yeah, I know, obviously it's on hiatus at the moment. I think it's right at the end of August or first week in September, isn't it, Belgium?
Yes, it's the 1st of September, 2nd of September, something like that. The first practice is 31st.
Okay.
First free practice, but yeah.
Cool.
And Mr. Lanigan?
You can find me at ericlanigan.com and twitter.com/ericlanigan, ericlanigan.
Thank you, sir, for your time and patronage. We'll be back again next week with the big show. Full panel next time, because it won't be the silly season. No one's going to be on holiday. And we'll have some fun. See you tomorrow for Photo Show and Mac Show. Till then, bye-bye.